The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We're coming to you live streaming at our websites today, thetrumpet.com and kpcg.fm. We're not streaming on YouTube, so no camera angles to look at today. It's probably going to be boring for you guys in the studio. I guess we just have one in there, Bradley. Don't get bored on me. Don't fall asleep. Stay focused. We'll still try to get through as much material as we can. On the program, even without the excitement of live television, which we attempted to do yesterday, and it went fairly well. In fact, we were talking this morning about maybe ways that we can do that every once in a while, or maybe even as frequently as once a week. So we'll talk about it here at Edstone over the next maybe in the next few weeks and see what we can. What we can plan. Of course, as far as live TV is concerned, we have the big online personal appearance campaign that's coming up on February 24th, 4 p.m. Edstone time, 10 a.m. In Oklahoma. And of course, all you need to view that live video presentation is an account at thetrumpet.com website. So if you don't have an account, make sure that you go to our website, that you sign up, and then you'll get access to that online video, which is now just 2.5 weeks away. Well, on today's show, we have lots to get to, several articles, one in particular that goes into why America can't win wars. And if you've read The Trumpet for any length of time, you know, you're well aware of what Herbert Armstrong prophesied. Even going back to the days immediately following World War II. We've pulled all of that information together, all of those prophecies together, and he was right. There's a chapter in there about America winning its last war. But when you see all these headlines, the pullout of Syria, the oncoming pullout of Afghanistan, and then these commentators that are weighing in saying, why is it? Why is it that we can't win like we used to? Well, we'll also, and this kind of ties in as well, but we'll also, later on in the show, we'll go through a little bit from that prophecy in Isaiah 1 about the whole head being sick, and as my father has talked before, or about before, it's a sickness that's from the top down, and so even though, and we played quite a few clips yesterday from the State of the Union address, and they were good clips. As I said on yesterday's program, it was an excellent speech. And you have to give President Trump some credit for identifying a lot of the problems that we're facing. And you have to give him some credit for the economic resurgence. But all of that aside, there's still a sickness that has set in. And it's a sickness from the top down. And we see so much still, in a lot of ways, because of the fact that Donald Trump is in there, it really is shedding light on so much government corruption. All of these spying scandals, the endless investigations. We'll talk about that more, as I say, in the second segment. I want to draw your attention first to GermanForeignPolicy.com. This is a courageous bunch. Situated somewhere in Germany. I'm not sure where. I suppose it's on their website. But these are individuals in Germany who are very concerned about the rise of Germany. You could probably say that there's the trumpet, and then not too far behind the trumpet, there's this outfit. Now, they don't have the, so far as I know, they don't have the prophetic insight. that we have, but they do have some good news gatherers, and they've even recently started producing videos. They're in German, so they're not very helpful for this program, but they print some of their stuff in English, and we quote from them frequently. This article here, or this latest update, talking about Germany, how that it's a temporary member of the UN Security Council, and it wants to be made a permanent member. It wants to be on par with the victorious powers of the Second World War, GermanForeignPolicy.com says. It is this Germany that swore in 1989 1,000 oaths to renounce forever and ever all world policy temptations to make German unity seem more trustworthy. They made a lot of promises back in 1989. They said, look, if you let us unify, if you let us come together, we're not going to cause trouble for the world. Never. Never again. German foreign policy, well, it points to some statements by Margaret Thatcher, which, again, we've pointed to. How that Thatcher was worried at the time about a reunified Germany. It says, today, Germany has its toe in the door of the UN Security Council. Germany has nearly regained everything it had lost in the world wars. Let me just repeat that for you. Germany has nearly regained everything it had lost in the world wars, and now it's looking for more to assume responsibility. Responsibility is the buzzword, it says, for military expenditures. It says late, much too late. This alleged responsibility is beginning to meet international resistance. Well, I'm not sure. Actually, I'm not actually so sure about that. Most people, most nations, they don't seem to care. There's a few in Europe, I suppose, that are concerned about German dominance. But here there's been all this talk, particularly between Germany and France, to build a European military. And the world hardly bats an eye. German foreign policy says that the one thing that the obvious huge difference between the United States and Germany is just the size of American military power and the fact that America has nuclear weapons. But it says Berlin is intensively working to overcome this deficit. And then it goes on to give all kinds of, again, quite a few quotes that you've even seen in the trumpet, and perhaps at the plain truth, years before we started. Franklin Roosevelt, who warned that Germany should not be left with a single element of military power. You know about the warnings. The warnings coming out of World War II from Roosevelt, from Churchill. Well, it quotes Henry Morgenthau. This is from back in 1945. Saying that Germany has the will to try it again. Germany has the means to try it again. Germany, said Morgenthau, is our problem. It's going to be another problem. Now you look at this report from GermanForeignPolicy.com, putting it together with other things you see in the news about Germany and France taking the initial steps forward in their new joint air combat system. They're building up the military. And clearly, they want to be less and less dependent on the United States because they see America as abandoning the neighborhood. So they've got to build up their own defense. They've got to be independent. And GermanForeignPolicy.com brings out that they're spending a lot more. When you put it all together, they're spending a lot more on their military. It says, in fact, the massive increase in funding will allow the Federal Republic of Germany to create an armaments industrial base largely independent of the United States. That's what they want now. Military independence. They've got the union. They've got the common currency. All of this, Mr. Armstrong prophesied. That's, and he was right, too. Now they just need the military. And, of course, what you need is thetrumpet.com. My father, just in the recent February issue, saying that France and Germany, they're already taking steps to build a European army. They're already moving in that direction. And you think about all of the criticism coming from Macron and France, the criticism toward the U.S., saying or implying anyway that Europe no longer needs NATO. America's said the same thing, that they've said we don't really need to be in it. If you're not going to pay your fair share, and then their response, well, we don't need you either. How dangerous is it when we all go our separate ways and just leave Germany to be the dominant power? Who else talks about this? Who else cares about it? You're not going to hear it anywhere else, except here, except at thetrumpet.com, except in the Trumpet magazine, except on the Key of David program. And of course, on all of those platforms, regularly, we're pointing you back to what Herbert Armstrong said. That framework of prophecy, Revelation 13 and 17, and before that, Daniel 2 and 7, the 10 nations. Listen to Mr. Armstrong from a sermon that he gave. This is actually a radio show, I believe, from way back in the 60s. But here he is giving the outline of prophecy and telling you where all of these events are leading. This is clip 8.
Now, prophecy gives a general, broad outline of the events that are taking place on the earth now and those that are going to happen. It does specifically tell us of one of the phases of World War that we believe is now the next one that we will call World War III. And it is not coming from the power and the source that we seem to suspect. No, we in the United States, my friends, seem to be so stupid we never can tell where our real enemy is until after he strikes. We can only see one enemy at a time, and I want to tell you that the United States has more than one enemy. Now, we fought a war against Germany, World War II, and Japan. Of course, we said at the beginning of World War II that we would certainly do away with German militarism and it would never rise up its ugly head again. We were going to demolish it once and for all, and after we got it demolished, now we start to rise it up ourselves because we think we have to have it as a buffer and a protection against Russia. And some of us, my friends, know not only what we see when we're over there, but we know also what is prophesied. And we know what is prophesied to rise up in Europe. And we know which is the one and the only nation in Europe that is capable of dominating, and which is the economic and the industrial heart of all Europe, without which there could be no stability and strength. A human body cannot live without its heart. And the economic and the military body that is to rise up and to restore the Roman Empire, the thing that we least suspect here in the United States, it cannot rise up without its heart. And its heart is in Germany.
The heart is in Germany. And then what about our nations? Well, look at what we see and look at what's prophesied. Here we've helped to raise it up. We're encouraging it. Even to this day. Go ahead, build a united military. Build your own military. We've had enough. That's what you hear coming out of the White House today. We're done. We're finished. We have poured trillions of dollars into all of these military efforts. And what do we have to show for it? This article I mentioned at the top, Why Can't America Win Its Wars? By Stephen Young. Why is it no longer winning its wars? President Trump had a cabinet meeting, a fairly controversial one, I guess. A lot of criticism that came in response to that meeting back at the start of this year, January the 2nd. But he made a pretty interesting and revealing comment during this cabinet meeting about America's inability to win wars. Here's clip 9.
You can talk about our generals. I gave our generals all the money they wanted. They didn't do such a great job in Afghanistan. They've been fighting in Afghanistan for 19 years. General Mattis thanked me profusely for getting him $700 billion. He couldn't believe it. General Mattis thanked me even more the following year when I got him $716 billion. He couldn't believe it. But General Mattis was so thrilled. But what's he done for me? How has he done in Afghanistan? Not too good. Not too good. I'm not happy with what he's done in Afghanistan, and I shouldn't be happy.
And, of course, there's maybe there's more to the story or more to that quote just because of the division of those two over the policy in Syria. But still, President Trump is pointing out an uncomfortable truth. We haven't done such a good job in Afghanistan. What do we have to show for it? He went on and said that he wanted results. This article by Stephen Young, he's obviously pointing to Afghanistan, the disappointment there after all of these years, 17 years? 17, 18 years? And then you go back before that. Somalia. Well, even before that, like Mr. Armstrong noted, Vietnam, the Korean War. We've referred to these prophecies as early as 1991. The trumpet only started in early 1990. We had an article in 1991, America has won its last war. And then in 2003, we asked why we cannot win the war against terrorism. Actually, we didn't ask it. That's a statement. Here's why. Here's why we can't win. There's another article at The Hindu. America has lost the Afghan war. Why do you see so many headlines like this? This is from just the other day. After 17 years of fighting, the Afghanistan war has reached nowhere. It says the U.S. has spent something like $877 billion on just that one war. And we've lost at least 2,000 Americans in that effort. And it asks, what do we get in return? The Taliban, which retreated in 2001, is on the comeback trail. Some estimates suggest that nearly half of Afghanistan, mostly the mountainous hinterlands, is now controlled by the Taliban. It says that Mr. Trump went and sent more troops in early on in 2017 to step up the fight against them. And since then, the U.S. has carried out large-scale air operations as well. But we can't seem to push back the Taliban's gaining momentum. And now we want out. The article says this shows how desperate the U.S. is to get out of Afghanistan, a war it has lost badly. It will be exiting on terms largely dictated by the Taliban. Now, we've covered this before. The so-called deal. We'll leave the country if you're nice. Basically, that's the deal. We'll get out of Afghanistan if you won't sponsor terrorism anymore. Another one here from the Wall Street Journal. Tired, and that's in quotes, tired Taliban fights on as U.S. is desperate to leave Afghanistan. The point of the article is, who's really tired here? Because we've been hearing for 10, 12 years from generals that the Taliban are getting worn down. They're tired of fighting. You can go back to 2004 when we were hearing about the tired Taliban. Well, now we're in 2019, and who's leaving? And who has the upper hand? And who's winning at the negotiating table? It says political, military, and intelligence leaders, as well as analysts and experts on Afghanistan, have been claiming the Taliban is exhausted from fighting for at least 15 years, and yet the Taliban fights while the U.S. is desperate to leave. Who's tired? Who's worn out? Whose strength has been spent in vain? Whose willpower has been broken? Whose pride in that power has been broken? These are all prophecies. It's all prophesied. It's in He Was Right. Another one here at CNN. It's time to let go of America's 18-year Afghan war. It's time to let go. Here's a case where Donald Trump, he agrees with CNN. That doesn't happen very often. But everyone concludes, we've got to get out. CNN says, admit it, for the past several years, the U.S. has defined winning as not losing. How do you win? How do you win the war against terrorism if the objective going in is to not lose? We just don't want to lose. And so every time that we leave, we talk about how, I guess it's a stalemate. Or, well, it's not winnable, but, you know, we haven't lost. We certainly didn't lose. Well, if you didn't win, how can you make that a victory? How can you make a retreat a victory? This last one here from Al Monitor, it says, will Iraq ask U.S. troops to leave the country? Why? Why are we not winning favor from these governments, from these nations we've liberated? Are they the next one to, the next host to ask American troops to leave? Well, I won't get into that article, but I'll just point you to the chapter in He Was Right. America has won its last war. And it talks about the prophecies from Mr. Armstrong following World War II. How that he boldly prophesied that the United States had won its last war. He points to, this article has all kinds of examples. The Bay of Pigs debacle. What the Plain Truth said about that in January of 1963. I said that when we failed to win in Korea, Mr. Armstrong blasted away, that we're not going to win another war. America's won its last war in 1965. This was just after hostilities erupted in Vietnam. There was a Plain Truth article, why the United States cannot win the Vietnam War. It's just over and again. This is from He Was Right. Make no mistake about it, the U.S. and other nations involved in support of South Vietnam would like to win, but they're afraid to take the action necessary to win. That's actually a quote from an old Plain Truth. That was Mr. Armstrong over and over and over. In 1978, he wrote in the Plain Truth about America's reputation taking such a beating because of one loss after another loss after another loss. Well, what about the United States and Britain in prophecy? As I say, all of this is prophesied. Mr. Armstrong writes, you need to open your eyes to the fact that Britain's sun already has set. You need to wake up to the fact that the United States, even still possessing unmatched power, is afraid, fears to use it. Just as God said, I'll break the pride of your power. That the United States, it says, has stopped winning wars. This is in the U.S. and Britain in prophecy. The last version of this printed in 1980. That America was unable, with all its vast power, to conquer little North Vietnam. It says the United States is fast riding to the greatest fall that ever befell any nation. And there's no political leader or administration that's going to be able to turn this around. That's the sad truth. Only God could rescue us. Only God could save us. And we'd have to do some deep repenting for him to intervene in that way. In the latest trumpet, the March 2019 trumpet, Brent Nachtigall, our Jerusalem correspondent, he has an article, America is Backing Out. And he takes you through all, particularly in the Middle East, all of these areas where the United States is pulling out. He refers to that prophecy in Daniel 11 and verse 40. The clash between the king of the north and the king of the south. And how that the United States, the greatest superpower in the history of the world, United States is missing. It's gone missing from that prophecy. You don't even see it mentioned there. That's because we're gone. We're gone from the region, and we're too weak to act. We're too weak to intervene. That's in the latest Trumpet magazine, March 2019. America is backing out. Go and look at that, review that. I mentioned that little quote from the U.S. and Britain in prophecy. And then don't forget to reread when you have the opportunity to reread He Was Right. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. The Holy Roman Empire has made pivotal and defining contributions to Western civilization, but its many reincarnations have also come with painful and catastrophic consequences. European leaders aim to unite the fractured continent of Europe by reviving the legacy of this extraordinary church-state combine. One of the great lessons of this empire is that it always comes back. There is always another resurrection. To understand much more on this vital subject, call now and request our free book, The Holy Roman Empire in Prophecy. The Holy Roman Empire is not just a relic of history. It is about to play a central role in world events. Coming to understand about the nature and character of this powerful institution tells you as much about the future as it does about the past. As part of this free offer, also request Herbert Armstrong's classic work, Who or What is the Prophetic Beast? Both booklets are available at no cost or obligation to you. In addition to the free book, you may also request a free subscription to our monthly news magazine, The Philadelphia Trumpet. The Trumpet examines world events under the clear light of Bible prophecy. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com.
There is going to be a resurrection of that old Roman Empire. Not very many people believe it, because people have gotten completely beyond really believing that the Bible means what it says. You're going to have to live and see it, and you're going to have to know that God was speaking when he said this thing is coming.
From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England. This is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Fleury.
In Isaiah 1 and verse 5, it says of our nations that the whole head is sick, the whole heart is faint. And so God's talking about a sickness from head to toe, as verse 6 brings out, but the head is what leads the body. It's what guides the body. He's talking about the power structure in our nations, the government, in other words. The whole head is sick. The leadership, it's sick. It just doesn't have the heart or the strength to solve the problems that we're facing. Why? Well, because of this sickness and disease. And you can applaud, as I say, you can applaud the administration, like my father brings out in Great Again, for identifying problems, for addressing people's concerns. But the sickness, verse 10 says, hear the word of the Eternal, you rulers of Sodom, give ear unto the law of our God, you people of Gomorrah, rulers of Sodom, and then the people of Gomorrah. It's all Sodom and Gomorrah from head to toe, top to bottom. So when you look at the upsurge that we're seeing in national pride, 76%, as I said yesterday, 76% of Americans, they heartily endorse the speech that President Trump gave the other night. There's an enthusiasm. There's an excitement for this resurgence, but it's fueled largely by economic optimism, and that's it. What about the sickness? Cheryl Atkinson, she has a piece out, I think, just yesterday about this lawsuit she's brought on the government, the DOJ, to be precise, Eric Holder, for spying on her years ago during the Obama administration, for hacking into her computer while she was an investigative reporter at CBS. And she's had multiple forensic investigations into her equipment to prove that the government, the U.S. government under Barack Obama, that it was illegally surveilling her, her family, intruding into her privacy. So she sounded the alarm initially with her writings and such, assuming that the Justice Department would want to police itself, that the Justice Department would be transparent. But she found out that that's not the way. That's not the way the deep state is. They don't want to shine light on their own transgressions. So she decided to pursue it herself. As I say, she got the forensic investigations going on her equipment, and then she filed suit against the government. She's suing the government for damages, and she's at, I think it's the Fourth Circuit of Appeals in the Southeast, I believe. I can't remember exactly, but in any event, they had their oral arguments just the other day, and so she's writing about what she's going through. She says, "What's been most striking to me in this process is just how one-sided the rules are when Americans take on their own government. It's been dismaying to learn the extent to which rules and laws shield the government from accountability for its abuses or even lawbreaking. So the rules and laws that are in place for you and me, we have to abide by them. You make one little slip up in a congressional testimony, you're going to jail. But there's a different set of rules for the government. And in a lot of ways, the rules shield the government. The rules protect the government." She talks about all of these special rules that allow for the government to stonewall, to delay, to avoid turning over documents. She describes it as a frightening lesson that she's learned going through this. She's a private citizen, so she has to fund all of this. She has to initiate it. She has to press the government. The government, on the other hand, can waste time. It has an endless supply of financing. Taxpayers, a never-ending supply of money coming from you and me. All kinds of lawyers, prosecutors. Look at the Bob Mueller team. 17 of the best left-wing prosecutors you can find. How much is that costing the U.S. taxpayer? So she's going up against this system. And after years, it says, after years of subpoenas, they have not turned over a single document. This is what Devin Nunes and others were so frustrated by these last couple years. They just can't seem to get the documents. So they have their oral arguments the other day, and the government, the lawyer representing the government, stands up and says, "Your Honors, this case should be dismissed because she doesn't even know the names of the federal agents who were doing the actual spying." And then Cheryl Atkinson's lawyers say, "Well, the reason we don't know that is because you won't divulge that information. You won't tell us. We know that spying went on." But you're covered by this cloud of secrecy. And we can't get for you to tell us who the actual agents were in Eric Holder's Justice Department. Akeson says, in short, the government withheld the names and now argues the lawsuit should end because I haven't learned the names. That effectively prohibits citizens from obtaining justice when government is the lawbreaker. She goes through some of the details from the oral argument. I think there were three judges, and it sounds like the judges are sympathetic to her case. But still, she says the stack is, it's clearly, or the deck rather, it's stacked against us. There's just too many processes that favor the government. And then on her side, as I say, she has to fund it. And as it happens, she has a prominent lawyer friend who's offering her pro bono services. And that's something most Americans don't have access to. She's also had a few groups, whistleblower groups, civil rights groups, privacy advocates that have helped her raise funds. I think she has a GoFundMe page. And she's a fairly prominent journalist. In other words, she actually has a few resources, not near as much as the government, but she has some means to at least fight them on this. Maybe not endlessly. Think about what happened to General Flynn. They destroyed him financially to where he had no options in the end but to just give them what they wanted. Never-ending resources for the government, but not in the case of John Q. Citizen. She has some resources. She's going after the government, and they don't like it. They don't like it. She says, even so, even with some extra help, this entire process has been expensive for me and my family, both financially and emotionally. We Americans like to believe we live in a free country with the right to use the justice system to ensure that government abuses are stopped or redressed. That's far from the truth, and it's an awful thing to experience it firsthand. She says, more important in the big picture is the hard reality that the courthouse is effectively closed for a significant portion of society in situations where the government is alleged to have violated basic fundamental constitutional rights of its own citizens. You can't get in there. It's shrouded in secrecy. You can't get in. It's like the FISA courts, and we'll talk about that here in a second. But you can't get in and figure out what's going on. She concludes, if my case fails to move forward with all of its detailed allegations and forensic evidence, it would effectively mean that no surveillance claim can ever be made to stick against the government. It would essentially create immunity for the feds who hack citizens' computers because the government, which holds the evidence, can obstruct and refuse to produce it. She says that seems entirely inconsistent with the rule of law. Well, it is. And the very abuses that she's talking about and that have been used against her, they've been used against Donald Trump. He didn't come out from the establishment. He wasn't really your traditional Republican or Democrat, for that matter. He was a businessman, and he came in vowing to drain the swamp, to expose this cancer. And they hate him, and they want to destroy him. And so they spied on him illegally, and they lied to judges. And they targeted him with informants. And they blasted him in the media, accusing him of all kinds of crimes. And none of it's been proven. Most of it's been disproven, in fact. But we're living in the age of, well, if the allegation is made against a conservative or against someone who's sticking up for the Constitution, then he's guilty. Now, it doesn't apply to Democrats. Look at Virginia. But if the allegation is there for a political enemy of the radical left, that's all that they need to try to destroy Virginia. John Solomon had a piece at The Hill about Bob Mueller and how that he was brought before, this is going back to 2002, he was brought before the FISA court and grilled for all of these, egregious acts, these acts of deceit, lies that federal agents made to get warrants to spy. It says, for most of the past 16 years, Mueller's closed-door encounter escaped public notice because of the secrecy of the FISA court, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court. Solomon says he was hauled before the nation's secret court back in 2002 to address a large number of instances in which the FBI cheated on sensitive surveillance warrants. The FBI cheating. Here again is the DOJ. Here again is the FBI. Here again is FISA applications. Here again is cheating and deceit. Solomon says, but thanks to recent testimony from a former FBI lawyer, we now have a rare window into documented abuses of FISA warrants and how the courts handled the matter. Now, because of testimony, and this is all brought on because of the attack on Donald Trump, and then the counterattack that Trump supporters are unleashing against these investigators, exercising all of these evil tactics. It's like my father has said, a lot has been exposed. The more they go after Donald Trump, the more they themselves are exposed. And as I've played before, John Solomon, in that interview from last year, he talked about in his interview with President Trump how the president is, he feels like he has to fight for this, because if they can come after him this way, what would they do to poor old Cheryl Atkinson? Listen to that bit from John Solomon. This is clip 7.
When we were leaving, he said something just as we were closing up shop, that if it could happen to me, it can happen to just about anyone in America, and that's what makes me concerned about this. That's why I want transparency. He used the word transparency at the end. That was his end goal. I thought that was interesting. If it can happen to me, it can happen to anyone. I think that's what motivates him.
That's what motivates him to fight back, because he knows. He knows. This is dangerous. When you have a lawless deep state that feels like it's above the law, lives are destroyed. It says in this Solomon piece, the sin that plagued the FBI two decades ago and that now lingers over the Russia case involves the omission of material facts by agents applying for FISA warrants in sensitive counterterrorism and counterintelligence cases. Does that sound familiar? This is going back to 2002. And you can see the fingerprints of the devil coming out of 9/11. And George W. Bush expanding the powers of surveillance and creating homeland security and all of that. You do it initially. You want to tap into phone lines so that you can hear what the terrorists are doing. But now it's being used to go after political enemies. Now it's being used to go after conservative reporters. It says such omissions are a serious matter at the FISA, because it is the one court in America where the accused gets no representation or chance to defend himself, and that means the FBI is obligated to disclose evidence of both guilt and innocence about the target of a FISA warrant. But what we're seeing is they go in without giving anything that would indicate innocence. They say he's guilty, and then, like in the case of the Steele dossier, they deceive the judge. They pretend that this is a legitimate document. This is legitimate research. It's not politically motivated. No, not at all. It was in Yahoo News. The news media has talked about this. That's how serious it is. That's the way they presented it to the judge. And the judge has signed off on it 4 different times. These warrants. Signed by James Comey, signed by Rod Rosenstein. and others, Andy McCabe, all of them, all of the Obama people. Well, I've mentioned that Greg Jarrett quote before, where he said that 99% of FISA applications are approved because the judge in these secret courts, the judge only hears one side and assumes that, well, it's the government. Surely the government, surely these FBI agents are telling the truth. They're trying to protect America, after all. Well, look at what we're learning now. Lawlessness abounds, just as Habakkuk prophesied. Habakkuk 1 and verse 4, lawlessness. Solomon says here, a declassified FISC order from 2002 gives a glimpse into how serious the omissions were. In one case, the FBI failed to tell the court that a person they were seeking a FISA warrant to surveil was in fact one of their own informants. This is almost like the Carter Page story all over again. It's the same playbook. Go in, tell the judge just what he needs to know to give you the approval, and then start spying. And no one will ever know the difference. No one will ever know. Well, it refers to this lawyer that blew the whistle on this during that congressional testimony. Says Anderson's testimony isn't just for the history books. It has as much relevance today as when the judges first became upset with the FBI in 2002. That's because we now know the FBI in 2016 omitted significant information from the application for the FISA warrant that allowed it to spy on Trump campaign advisor Carter Page in hopes of finding evidence of collusion between Russia and the GOP presidential nominees. Campaign. And the investigations continue. There's no sign of any let up. If Mueller's about to finish with his report, the House Democrats, they're going to pick up right where that left off and continue all the way through 2020 and beyond if they have to. President Trump in the State of the Union address the other night, he talked about the booming economy and how that the only thing that could get in the way of it is all of these partisan investigations. Listen to what he said, clip one.
An economic miracle is taking place in the United States, and the only thing that can stop it are foolish wars, politics, or ridiculous partisan investigations. If there is going to be peace and legislation, there cannot be war and investigation. It just doesn't work that way.
So, there cannot be war and investigation. Now, the Democrats took that as a threat. He was stating publicly that the investigations must stop. Nancy Pelosi said it was an all-out threat. Adam Schiff, he said, I can understand why the idea of meaningful oversight terrifies the president. Look, several associates of his have gone to jail. Others are awaiting trial. That's not a threat. But what the president said in the State of the Union, that's a threat. Adam Schiff, Nancy Pelosi, any of the others can say, you're going to jail, president. And that's just fine. The New York Times just today, it says the House, this is from yesterday, news reporting on what happened yesterday, the day after the State of the Union. The House Intelligence Committee on Wednesday began a broad inquiry into whether Russia and other foreign powers may be exercising influence over President Trump. Now it's Russia and other foreign powers. It's not just Russia. The investigation is expanding, don't you know? It says, meeting for the first time this Congress, the Intelligence Committee laid out a 5-point investigation of the president's potential foreign entanglements, scope than previously expected. Even the New York Times is surprised by this. It's wide open now. We need the tax returns. We need the business dealings. We need anything and everything he's done internationally, because that may have influenced decisions that he's made as president. Can you believe this? Never ending. The corruption from head to toe. The president's right. He's tweeted out that Barack Obama never would have been treated this way. And look at all of the executive actions he was taking. And look at all of the violations of the Logan Act, if you want to pull that out of the archives. It says, Democrats said they had reopened the inquiry into Russia's election interference and possible collusion with the Trump campaign that the Republican majority closed last year. They've got to reopen that. 2 years on, there is no collusion. There's never been any evidence of collusion. There's never been any evidence of collusion in these indictments brought on Trump associates that are supposedly guilty of process crimes. No collusion. Now it's reopened. Now they've got to dig into it. Surely it's there. It says, but they will layer on interconnected lines of inquiry, including whether Russia or other foreign actors hold financial or other leverage over Mr. Trump and his associates that at any point could have influenced American policy. If there's anything that he's done in the history of his life that might have influenced American policy, well, he needs to go to jail. He's guilty. Here's what Adam Schiff had to say when he announced that they were coming out with this 5-point investigation. Clip 2.
The American people have a right to know, indeed have a need to know, that their president is acting on their behalf and not for some pecuniary or other reason. That pertains to any credible allegations of leverage by the Russians or the Saudis or anyone else.
Russians, not just Russia now, the Saudis, anyone else, any other nation. And all of his friends in the Democratic Party, they came out in full force saying that America, the American people, they have a right to know. Here's Eric Swalwell, clip 3.
But our interest is that we want to make sure the president of the United States is not financially compromised. And there's deep, deep evidence to suggest that he governs by transactional value, meaning that he's drawn us so close to the Saudis and the Russians because he has benefited financially from them in the past. And there's good reason to look at investments that they've made in him, investments he's made in them, and to see if we need to interdict to protect America's national security.
Deep, deep evidence, says Swalwell. Schiff has said the same thing. I have evidence of collusion. I've seen it. He's never shown it. But he says he's seen it. And so endless investigations. Here's Mazie Hirono, clip 4.
There are two things that President Trump cares about. One is protecting himself and money. So the kind of financial ties that President Trump, his organization, people around him have with Russia, for example, Saudi Arabia, any other countries that would compromise how he views our relationships with these countries and what we're going to do, I think those are very legitimate areas of inquiry for Adam Schiff, because we want to know that the president is actually working on the behalf of the U.S., us, Americans, rather than Russia or Saudi Arabia, but particularly Russia at this point.
So they've all read the same talking points, Russia, and then throw in Saudi Arabia, and then, for good measure, just say any other nation as well. We've got to get him. We've got to broaden this investigation. And when asked about this investigation, the president, this was his response yesterday, clip 5.
On what basis would he do that? He has no basis to do that. He's just a political hack who's trying to build a name for himself, and I think that's fine because that's what they do, but there would be no reason to do that. No other politician has to go through that. It's called presidential harassment, and it's unfortunate, and it really does hurt our country.
It really does. He's right. Presidential harassment. No, name one politician who's had to go through something like this nonstop for 2 years, even longer than that, because he was being spied on halfway through 2016. Presidential harassment. There is no Russian collusion. He keeps saying over and over again. And yet they won't stop in this witch hunt. They won't stop with this hoax. No, they want to expand it. They're expanding the parameters. Those parameters are wide enough with Bob Mueller. Process crimes, that's all that they got. And now they want to expand it to see all the papers, all that goes into the business dealings of his past life of building hotels all over the world. Surely, if we can just get our hands on all of that, we can prove that he's a secret Russian agent. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, send comments to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us on today's program, and we'll see you tomorrow.